Caffeine and Questions 11, I think it is. So I throw these questions out on social media if you haven't seen it before, and I get a bunch, and I got like 150 questions. So there's no way I'll get through them all. A lot of them are kind of similar. So generally, if I answer one, I'll probably answer three at a time. But usually I have a nicer setting than this. I'm at home. I have a little podcast studio at home, but I'm in a hotel in Utah and west of Salt Lake City, working for the Marine Corps as a special operations sniper instructor. I've been here for about 3 weeks, and I'll be here for another week, and I'll be heading back, driving back to North Carolina. I brought the Sprinter van out, drove all the way. I was already in Little Rock, Arkansas, training cops. So I was like, frig it, I'll just go. I like to drive. But I'll be questioning that decision around about like Oklahoma or somewhere like that. I'll be like, what the hell was I thinking? But I freaking hate driving. So I got a ton of questions. I'm going to get through as many as I can. Just bear in mind, this is my opinion. A lot of stuff, if you ask my opinion, I will give you my opinion. Doesn't mean it's right. But it's my opinion based on generally, you know, having experience with that piece of equipment or in that part of the world or whatever that is. If you don't like it, then tune out, okay? Book recommendations. So a couple of people ask about book recommendations. I used to read a lot. Now I listen to books on tape, on Audible, while I'm driving, because I drive so much. On the way out here, I was looking for something to listen to. I listened to one about the Cold War, but it was very wave tops. I'm looking for something more kind of in the weeds, tradecraft type stuff in that Cold War 80s, 70s, 80s type thing. I'm very interested in that. I also listened to one about the Crusades, kind of pertinent now with the Palestinians and the Israelis, and I'll talk about that later on. When I got out here, I got recommended a book called Code Over Country, which is about the corruption and problems the Navy SEALs have had over the last couple of decades, really, since Marcenko stood up SEAL Team 6. Now, it's easy to bash the SEALs. I'm not going to do that here. But this book walks through a bunch of things that have happened in that SEAL community over the last, you know, couple of decades. And some of them are extremely horrific. Okay, they murdered a Navy or a Green Beret in Mali, a guy I knew. Didn't know him well, but I'd met him. And you can read the book or listen to the book and decide whether it's manslaughter or murder. I think he was convicted of manslaughter, but horrible. There's in the special operations, anybody who's been in special operations for more than a day understand the culture in the SEAL community. And it's very much protect the brand, protect the brand, protect the brand at all costs. And they close ranks and they protect guys and all that. And it's all about movie deals and books and all that garbage. But you can, I highly recommend the book. You can listen to it, you can read it, and you can make your own opinions on it. There's good and bad everywhere, in every military unit, in every special operations unit. But how it's dealt with in the SEALs is different. And it's become a terrific problem in their community, and they've lost a ton of credibility within the SOCOM community. Code Over Conduct, really good. The only thing that bothered me about the book was this 2020 hindsight in attacking a warrior culture when wars have been going on for 20 years, okay? Maybe politicians should stop freaking starting wars, and maybe then we wouldn't have guys going to deployments and going, you know, doing stuff that human beings aren't supposed to do over and over and over and over again. Yeah, war is not pretty, but some of the things that in that book will probably shock you. When it comes to ballistics, people are like, hey, what should I read getting into long-range shooting? Applied Ballistics for Long-Range Shooting, Brian Litz, really good. Gets a little technical sometimes. Brian is a wicked smart guy, but you can skip over sections and try to understand it at your level as best you can. You may have to read it a couple of times. The other thing you can do is you can freaking do a Zoom call with me, and I'll start you off at your level and walk you through step by step by step. Shameless plug, but it is a good way to get started with long range shooting. A couple of people asked about the 6.8 rifle that the Army have procured to replace the M4. It's 2.77 Fury. It's a 6.8 combat rifle. SIG won the contract, and Vortex won the contract for the optic. The optic's got a ballistic calculator in it and a rangefinder and all this kind of stuff. Not knocking SIG. SIG produced the rifle that they were asked to produce. Not knocking Vortex. They produced the optic. They were asked to produce two great companies, honestly. But something you need to understand if you're dealing with the military is getting a contract means absolutely nothing. Every contract like that is what's called IDIQ. And IDIQ stands for indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity, which means is the army will tell you, the government will tell you, hey, we're going to buy 10 of your systems minimum, and there's an indefinite number. So we can buy thousands or whatever, or we can stop at 10. The indefinite delivery is a timeline. Hey, we will buy 10 within this timeline, and there's no cap on the timeline, right? It can go on for 20 years or we can kill it right there. And having a contract with the government doesn't really mean anything. Okay, because they'll buy 10 and then a new guy come in, new general, new freaking, and they'll change the priority to something else. Replacing the M4, I was not involved in this, but I was aware of it because it's an army program. I worked in special operations in the acquisitions world. But I was aware of this from the very start, and it was a solution looking for a problem. And what they ended up with, they wrote the specifications for the thing, and they were pushing muzzle velocity. And they kind of blew off all the other specifications to get muzzle velocity. So they ended up with a big, heavy rifle that recoils a lot. The ammunition's heavier, you can carry less of it. And honestly, in my opinion, this gun will never see the light of day, okay? I think it'll get bought in small numbers and may even get fielded in small numbers, and then it'll fade like a lot of other programs. Likewise with the optic. The optic has built-in ballistics, built-in rangefinder, adversary, all that kind of stuff. And again, SIG built the optic they were asked to build, but to feel that would also, the biggest gap, the biggest capability gap in the US military is training. Most soldiers have not out-trained the equipment they have. And sometimes, not sometimes, a lot of times, the government will throw technology at a problem to replace training. And it should be the other way around. The training should be better. So my opinion, this gun will never see the light of day. And it's different when you're trying to acquire weapons and night vision goggles and vehicles and all-terrain vehicles and stuff that the industry can sell to the civilian market, right? Because once you put a requirement out there, and we started this requirement in SOCOM, this thing, and it was for a sniper rifle. It was for an optic where, as a sniper, you get on a target. If you have to come out of your optic to rangefind it, look at data and reacquire it, sometimes you can't reacquire that target a lot of times. So it was for a requirement where the sniper never has to come out of the optic. Now, when you push that as a requirement through SOCOM, a lot of times optics companies and gun companies are willing to put their own research and development dollars in to try to get that because they understand that they can sell it to the civilian world. And companies will generally make more money selling a piece of equipment that was procured by the military. They'll make more money selling it to the civilian world than they will to the military. And the SCAR is a great example of that. And I have a couple of questions about the SCAR. The SCAR was a poorly written program and not a great system, right? You can see that not many people carry a SCAR, but they sold a ton of SCARs to the civilian world because SOCOM picked it up as a program of record, even though it was a failure generally. The SCAR heavy recoils so violently, it's not a good system. The SCAR sniper support weapon, the semi-automatic, it recoils so violently, it'll break optics. But FN knew that they would make more money selling to civilians than the SOCOM. So having a contract in the military doesn't mean a whole lot. It'll get killed like that because priorities change. This 6-8 program came from Millie, and maybe he should have been concentrating and withdrawing from Afghanistan and not getting his nose into rifle stuff. A general officer hadn't shot a rifle in a long, long time. And he was pushing for this, and wouldn't take no for an answer. They looked for extreme muzzle velocity, which they never got to. But like I said, they kind of sacrificed all these specifications that soldiers care about to get this muzzle velocity and this rifle caliber. Soldiers are going to hate it. And I personally don't think it'll ever get fielded in big numbers. Purely my opinion, but I'm kind of in the know. That's that 6-8 program. Podcast guest. Somebody asked about podcast guests. So I just did Command Sergeant Major Lee Strong, who's the SWIC Command Sergeant Major. If you haven't listened to that one, it's on YouTube, I think, and on the podcast. But he's in charge of all training and special operations selection, the qualification course, free fall school, sniper school, all everything. And so he is the guy in charge, and he's the perfect guy for it because he has the right mindset about training soldiers. I am going to do a follow-up on that. I think that I'm going to be able to go to selection and do a behind-the-scenes video on some of the stuff that goes on selection without giving away secrets. Still in the works for that stuff, so that's good. I just, one of the instructors that's a part-time instructor like me here for the Special Operations course for the Marine Corps, I just did a podcast with him about his career path, and I'm going to do a second one probably today on leadership. So this guy's super interesting guy, more interesting, you know, career than I had. He joined the Marine Corps, enlisted, and was a crew chief on a Huey helicopter, and he was enlisted for a couple of years and then became a Marine Corps officer. Spent a couple of years an officer, didn't want to move into that higher echelon officer behind the desk world, so resigned his commission and joined the Army. Was enlisted in the Army, joined as a staff sergeant, went to 19 Special Forces Group, which is the National Guard Special Forces Group, which somebody asked about that too, and I'll talk about that later. Went to selection, passed selection for Special Forces, deployed down range, doing sniper support stuff and really cool stuff for 19th Group. And then because a year had lapsed since he went to selection, when he came back, they wanted him to go to selection again. And he was like, nah, I'm going to go in the Army, or back in the Marine Corps as an officer. Went back in the Marine Corps as an officer, spent 9 years with Force Recon as an officer. So his career is really, really interesting. Currently, he's a jungle tracker instructor. He's a military mountaineer instructor, and he's a special operations sniper instructor too, among other things. So I did that podcast with him. It should drop in a couple of days. Then I also will do today a leadership podcast. Now, there's no video for that. It's not going to be on YouTube. It's only going to be on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon, right? But that's a really good one coming up. Somebody asked about plans for 2024. I'm going to really ramp up the Zoom call stuff in the winter. And then I'm looking to expand the long range shooting stuff because it's there's a market for it. Long range shooting, precision rifle, competitive shooting is getting more popular in the civilian world. And there's not a lot of places out there that do proper training at that level. So I'm going to try to ramp that up. I'm going to try to fill it in with some Zoom training or online training. I've been training cops, looking to do more of that, do advanced sniper training for law enforcement. Kirsten has she's working on an ebook for situational awareness, which I think is great. She has a big background in that. She was a police officer for 12 years. She was on a SWAT team in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is a violent city. She was on a SWAT team for 7 years. She's a mom. She's really practical and looks at things very practically and she's the perfect person for doing that. So she's writing ebook on situational awareness, and hopefully that'll drop soon. Somebody had a lot of leadership questions, and I'm going to hit them really quickly, but I would ask you to listen to the leadership podcast I'm going to do with Cody Carroll. That's the guy who was a Marine officer. I think you'll get a lot out of it. If somebody asked me like one trait of a good leader, and I think integrity is, there's a lot of traits that make a good leader, but I think integrity is really, really important. As soon as you do something unethical, illegal, or immoral, and people will see that, and you lose the ability to discipline people. You've got to keep that moral high ground, okay? Advice for a younger you. I had to think about this for a long time because I've been fairly successful in my life. But when I started in the military, I was deathly scared of public speaking. Deathly scared. And I remember when I was in the range wing, it was before I ever had to teach a class because I was an infantry private. I was almost physically sick. And it was among my peers. And I rehearsed it and rehearsed it and rehearsed it. And I did it and it went well. I got a little better, a little better, a little better. If I had to talk to myself at 18, I would tell myself, I don't know if I would listen to me, but I would tell myself that most people are freaking faking it. Most people that you think have got it all figured out are just BSing it, and they're faking it until they make it, until they figure it out. It takes a long time to figure that stuff out. So this, pushing confidence and being really, really, projecting confidence when you teach, that is a lot of times behind the scenes, inside, those people are second guessing themselves and they're just trying to get through it, but they're good at projecting that self-confidence. And the people in the military throughout my career that I really thought had their shit together, when I look back, I'm like, they didn't know anything. And it has, lack of self-confidence has plagued me my whole career. And I if I could look back and talk to myself at 18, I would say, stop drinking so much and get a little self-confidence. You're not as far behind other people as you think you are. Somebody asked, have you seen any historical forts in South Carolina? I went to Fort Sumter, which if you're in that area, it's a really, really cool fort. That's where the Civil War started, and it's very well preserved, and it's a great place to go. Favorite memory working overseas? I think of all the deployments I did, and I had some great deployments, and I had some shitty deployments too. Somalia was kind of special for me because, I don't know, if you haven't listened to the podcast, it came at a time after my mom died and I was in a really weird place and it kind of put me back on the right track. And I was over there in chaos, and somebody described it as a madman's paradise, but not like I was a madman, but it really, really kind of set me up for the future. So that I don't know if you call it a deployment, but that work experience I had in Somalia, and the most dangerous city in the world, really, really set the precedent for me going forward. Advice for military sniper. If you're a military sniper, shoot competitively. Join the PRS program. Don't think because you're a military sniper, you're going to go out there and crush everybody, because you're not. Because there's phenomenal shooters there. But every time you go, it's a good community. Every time you go, you learn something. You'll keep that craft going. And, you know, when you graduate sniper school, no matter if it's Army Sniper School or Special Operations, as soon as you get your certificate and walk to your car, your skills start dropping. Very perishable skill. And it's hard with all the other things you do in the military to keep that level of proficiency. But if you shoot competitively, you will maintain a very level. It's shooting fast and accurate under pressure. Pretty close to what you do when you're in combat. Shoot competitively and maintain that skill set. Closest call in combat, I had a bunch. I had bullets whizz right past my head. But in 04, we drove into a meeting with village elders in soft skin vehicles and no doors early on. And we drove into this remote village, and we went and we talked to the elder, and the elder said, "Did you see the bomb on the road back there?" And we were like, "That road that we drove in on?" And he's like, "Yeah." And we went back, and there was a bunch of artillery shells buried underneath the ground, like a lot of them, running to a command wire to a battery box. And the battery box was in low ground. They had rain the day before, and the battery box got wet. And that's the only reason that they didn't detonate. And after that, I was like, okay. And Afghanistan's weird because you can only go a certain route. You're very, very channelized because there's only a few roads, and you end up driving in riverbeds. And, you know, the number one rule when you're dealing with roadside bombs, IEDs on the road, is vary your route. But you can only vary your route so much in that country. That was a pretty close call. But I've had a lot of them. some piece of kit that the Army never bought. The Army never bought me a lot of stuff. And even to this day, guys buy their own shit. They buy their own stuff. Now, you can't vary it too much because you got to look like a military, like a US soldier, right? But guys buy, I bought my own vest. I bought my own plate carrier. I bought my own boots. I bought all kinds of stuff when the military did not give me the gear I needed. Now, it's gotten better. And the guys do get good stuff. But sometimes they go, and you know, the place that issues their gear, it doesn't have their size, and generally they'll go buy their own stuff because this is the world they live in and they want to have good equipment. So I bought a lot of my own stuff over the years. That's why I got a basement full of stuff. Somebody asked what vest you have, and a lot of those pictures is GWAT. There's two different ones. One is like a very minimalist vest. It's a chest rack. It's made by Tactical Tailor. And I just bought it right before I didn't get issued. I bought it right before I deployed to Afghanistan in 04. The other one is a big kind of vest, which I got in Ireland, and I can't remember where I got it. I bought it from a store, I think. But it's very typical of European vests for European military. It's got a lot of pouches on it. It's more of a vest rather than like a chest rack. But if anybody sees it and they know where it came from, I personally can't remember. It was a long time ago. Thoughts on the Israeli-Palestine conflict. I spent a lot of time in the Middle East. I've been to Israel. I've been to Lebanon twice, the Irish Army. I've been all over the Middle East over the years, right? If you show weakness in the Middle East, you will draw aggression. If Israel doesn't strike back hard against Hamas, we could be pulled into World War III. And that's not, you know, fear-mongering or exaggeration. If they don't strike back against Hamas, Hezbollah will attack them. Hezbollah is backed by Iran. You're pulling global conflict in there, and it could end up in a much bigger conflict, or it could even end up in a nuclear conflict. And that's not blowing smoke. The reason we, like all through the Cold War, the reason we didn't have nuclear war generally was because of mutually assured destruction. Right? If you have two or three countries with nuclear weapons, they know if they launch that, they're going to get hit back hard. And basically everybody's gonna lose. But when you're dealing with countries that don't care, they'll wipe all their own people out to get what they want, then it becomes very, very unpredictable. So Israel is going to have to strike back hard against Hamas and destroy them. Now, if Hamas wants to put their civilians in harm's way, that's their choice. They voted. And this bullshit I see on the news about, oh, proportional response, stop. When we got attacked in Pearl Harbor, was dropping two nuclear bombs in Japan a proportionate response? No, you have to, they're like a cancer, you got to cut them out. or it'll never stop. In World War II, the Allies firebombed cities in Germany to try to kill as many civilians as possible, because we had to get rid of a fascist Nazi state that was wreaking havoc, right? So don't throw this proportional response bullshit out. You have no idea what you're talking about. And people are like, well, they should send special ops in. You have no idea what you're talking about. They need to go in hard. They need to go. Where's all these other Arab countries taking all these civilians from Palestine? They don't want them because they don't want the trouble. So Israel needs to go in and crush them and wipe them out once and for all, or they'll never, ever have peace. Having trouble with wind calls for long range shooting, what should I do? You should do a Zoom call with me. Shameless plug, but it's hard to teach you wind calls over this medium, right? There's a lot of stuff goes into it. And if you can't do a wind call, everything else can be accounted for with a ballistic calculator, but wind calls are difficult and it takes a long time. But there's some tricks and tips that you can learn to make you better. I just can't do it in this short time. Where were you stationed at in Ireland? I was stationed in Dundalk. I grew up in Dundalk. I grew up in Black Rock. Stationed in Dundalk initially for a couple of years in the infantry, patrolled the border in Northern Ireland. And then I went down to the Curragh when I went to the Ranger Wing, and I was there for the rest of my time in the Irish Army. Did a podcast on it, run back. Ballistic apps. Somebody said Strelok Pro is banned. It is banned. It's a Russian app, so it's been taken off in response to the Ukraine thing. Geoballistics is a pretty decent one. You're never going to get as good a data from an app on your phone as you will from a Kestrel. But Kestrels are expensive, and you may want to work up to it. But a good interim solution is a ballistic calculator on your phone. And geoballistics is a pretty good one. What should I expect to pay for entry-level gear for long-range shooting? You're talking a rifle. You can get a rifle for about $1,500 to $2,000. Decent rifle. You get an optic for about $1,500 to $2,000, right? And you need a bipod for about $500. That's a minimum you're going to need. So what's that, like $4,500, $5,000? I know that's a lot of money. But if you buy a crap rifle and you buy an optic from Walmart, you're just not going to learn. You're just not. Save up for it. I tell you, long-range shooting is very addictive. And when you get a decent system, then you'll go shoot with people, or you shoot a match and you'll see the better stuff out there. And, I hate saying I'm going to do content in case I don't get to it, because I always want to under-promise and over-deliver. But I've been trying to get to a precision rifle store that's near my house and talk to the guys and walk through and go, okay, I want this rifle, and I'll buy everything, so I'm not behooved to anybody, right? Beholden to everybody. But I want this rifle, you know, a Tika, a Ruger, a Precision, something like that. That's not crazy expensive, but shoots really well. This optic, this mount, this bipod. And now I'm going to shoot it. I'm going to mount the scope, zero it, run it through a chronograph, get the ballistics from it and all that, and just do it start to finish. But again, I've been out here for 3 weeks and I just have no time. I should have a little bit more time when I get back. My next long-range shooting course is in Virginia in 9-10 December, and it's sold out, but I may add a couple of slots. I got to square it with the range first to see if they can accommodate that. So if you're looking to get into that class in Virginia, keep an eye on the website. I may add a couple of slots to that. But it is expensive to get into. I mean, if I'm going to start shooting pistol, I'm going to buy a pistol and a couple of mags and some ammo and go to range, right? It's not like that. You're going to have to put a little bit of money in up front, but it's extremely addictive and extremely satisfying. And once people get their foot in the door, they can't get enough, but you're always going to try to upgrade your gear. I'm upgrading my gear right now because the stuff I have is a little older. Hindsight being 2020, is there anything you wish you did differently in the military? The only thing sometimes I think about is maybe I should have went to Delta Force selection. Okay, the top unit in the whole freaking world, in my opinion, is Delta Force. The stuff I said about SEALs earlier on, you don't hear that stuff about Delta. Now, you step out of line in Delta and they will crush you. They don't insulate, they don't hide your problem, they will destroy you. And kick you out in a heartbeat, because they need to protect they're dealing with operators who do stuff that with international consequences, and there's no room for error in there. And I get that. There was a time when I thought about it, but I was kind of new in SF, and because I came in so late, and so I didn't go. But that's the only thing I wish I would have done, because they're such a professional unit. And I know a lot of guys over there, and they really do some really cool stuff that you'll never hear about because they're just not that guy. Best flannel. This one is Cryptek. this heavy flannel. I really like it. It's really comfortable. Cryptic make some good stuff. I bought a bunch off their website recently, and then Cool makes some really nice stuff as well. Once I find something I need, I just buy a ton of it, and you know, because I don't like to shop. Tavor update. So the Tavor is the 5.56 bullpup the Israeli army use. I got one about a year ago, and I did all the content, and the content got jacked up, so I haven't read. I'm going to fix it. Somebody was saying, I'm thinking of buying one. Want your opinion. I love the Tavor. I love it. It's a freaking bullpup, and people don't like bullpups. They're generally people who've never shot a bullpup. A bullpup puts all the magazine and all that behind the trigger, and the barrel runs all the way back. So you can get a 16-inch barrel in a gun, in a rifle that's no bigger than an M4 with a 10.5-inch barrel, right? So you don't have to get a special stamp for a short barrel rifle like you do in most states. There are some states that won't let you buy it. It's a overall requirement. I think New Jersey, and it might be more, probably California. But in most states, because it has a 16-inch barrel, you can buy it right off the counter. And you don't need a special tax stamp. But people will say, well, it's a 2 minute of angle rifle. When I shot it and I grouped it and I got used to the trigger a little bit, I could shoot like a minute, minute and a half with it, right? Now, let's say it's a 2 minute of angle group. A 2 minute of angle group at 100 gives you, if you're shooting at 500, that gives you a 10-inch group. That's not bad for a carbine. Yep, there are M4s out there that'll shoot sub-minute of angle. I have one, I have a couple. But if I wanted another M4, I'd just get another M4. This thing is super comfortable to shoot, puts all the weight in the back. It's great for alternate positions. It's very concealable if that's something you want. And it shoots quite well. The trigger is pretty crappy on it. I upgraded the trigger to a Geissele trigger, and I changed the muzzle brake out. I put an Area 419 muzzle brake on it, and it's a pretty nice rifle. I'm going to do the whole video review when I get back. I have some time over Christmas because it's the weather sucks. And I'll get it all out there, you know, if I can salvage some of the content that I had. But I like it. It's a really nice rifle. And like I said, if I wanted another AR, I'd just buy another AR. So whoever sent me that question, yeah, go ahead and buy one. I think you'll like it. Brief overview on holdovers for Mills, Milrad, Milradiance. Can't get into this. Like, I need PowerPoint and stuff. You can do a Zoom call with me. Again, another shameless plug. But if you have a rifle and you've mounted a scope and you know what you're doing generally, go zero it, get a chronograph. I recommend the Magneto Speed. It's easy to use, not that expensive. Zero it, chrono your gun to get the muzzle velocity, get geoballistics on your phone or get a Kestrel, build that gun and it'll give you all your holes, basically, right? The only other shortcut would be to do what we used to do back in the day before we had ballistic calculators, and we would shoot at 100 and 150 and 2 and 250 and all the way back and gather data. But bear in mind that data changes once you change density altitude, or if you get a whole new lot of ammo, you're going to have to redo it. The beauty of a ballistic calculator is you just got to re-chrono it. Zero, chrono, boom, I'm back in business. But it there's no shortcut, right? I can't go, hey, do this, right? The only shortcut I could see, or as fast as possible way to get data, is to zero chrono and run your stuff through a ballistic calculator and understand what you're doing. If you had only one thing to teach people for long range shooting, what would it be? And it would be wind. Wind is our nemesis. Wind is why we miss targets. Everything else you can account for with a ballistic calculator. Wind is the reason why. Everything's important, but some things are more important than others, right? So if I could teach you one thing, it'd be wind. And wind is tough, and wind is, it's very fluid and it's always changing. But there are, like I said earlier, there are little tricks where you can get hits better. All right. Do you train jiu-jitsu? I don't. I wish I did. I wish I'd gotten it when I was younger. I did martial arts when I was a teenager. I did combatives and fighting and all kinds of boxing and stuff in the military, but I never really got into Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I think it's a phenomenal skill to have, but I don't do it personally. I've done some grappling, but not that much. How would you set up your 14.5 AR style for mid-range shooting 600 max LPVO, low power variable optic, 1-6, 1-8? The SIG LPVO is freaking inexpensive, like $300 or something. It's very inexpensive for what you're getting. It has a good eye box. And somebody else somewhere asked, what do I look for in LPVO? Look for a good eye box, right? If the eye box is good, it's very forgiving. Some of those eye boxes are really unforgiving. So if I'm not perfectly in line behind my gun when I'm shooting, it'll just go black, right? Look for a good eye box on it. And you can't beat that SIG LPVO for the price. Now, there's other companies make phenomenal ones, but they're a little more expensive. Vortex make a great one. The 1-8 and 1-10 that Nightforce make are phenomenal, but they're expensive, right? It depends what you're willing to spend. Another leadership one, check out the podcast I'm about to do with Cody Carroll. What kind of obedience work do you do with Vinny? Vinny's my service dog. He's a Belgian Malinois. Again, Malinois are phenomenal. He's highly intelligent. You've got to keep up his training or he'll take advantage of it. If you let something go once, he's like, oh, that's a new rule. So we try to hold him accountable all the time for everything. And he loves it. Like he's such a cool dog. Somebody asked about heavy bolt lift on a bolt gun. That's generally a change your ammo. Sometimes on the ammo, the powder is really, really pushing hard and it's very hot round. You'll get blown primers and you'll get heavy bolt lift on it. Change your ammo and see if that helps. Wisconsin, somebody asked about training in Wisconsin. One of the instructors here, who's a part-time instructor with me, is from Illinois, but close to the Wisconsin border. He's looking for ranges for me up there. I'm willing to travel. I'm willing to run courses in other places, but it's hard to find ranges that will accommodate me, right? And it doesn't have to be a big fancy range. I just need a classroom that'll take 12 to 16 people maybe, and a range that'll go out to 800 preferably, and I'll travel and I'll do social media and cross promote your range if it's a good professional operation. But always looking for new places, and I have a guy in place now in that part of the country. So in spring, when the weather doesn't suck up there, we may run a course up that direction. Somebody asked me about the UK's new Ranger Regiment. I didn't know anything about it. I had to look it up. But apparently the British Army have started 4 battalions, I think, of Ranger Regiment. And they're modeled off American Green Berets to do foreign internal defense and train under armies, which is kind of smart because that's where these all proxy wars are going on. And you're getting access and placement and influencing armies at that level. The army tried to, and this is another MILI initiative, so they tried to send up the SFAB, and it was a regular army unit with the advisor tab and all that kind of thing. I have no idea where that is. I think they lack maturity, and they were supposed to only train like admin tasks and stuff like that. I know they got tons of money thrown at them, but I don't think it was very, very successful. And I remember Millie going up, Millie being in front of Congress, explaining it and saying, special forces don't train regular army. They only train special. Now, that's complete bullshit and a lie. And he knows better because I've trained regular army. I've trained special operations in foreign country, but I've also trained militia units. So that was a complete lie. Are you going to do any survival or bug out or preparedness classes in 2024? I thought about it, but I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence between working for the Marine Corps, doing law enforcement, doing long range and stuff like that. I'm kind of busy enough. Now, I do have enough contacts within the special operations community that I could outsource stuff, but I will only outsource stuff to people I absolutely trust. I am going to SHOT Show in January. I haven't been to SHOT Show since I left the military. Not a huge fan of SHOT Show, but I am going to talk to a couple of companies. I don't even know what I want. I'm very uncomfortable with the marketing stuff. If you notice, I don't push anybody's stuff. I do say, hey, I like Cryptek clothing. I don't get a dime for that. Nobody pays me right now. Nobody. And I will never take money and push a product that I am not 100%. I talk about Kestrel all the time. Kestrel doesn't pay me a dime, but I really, really believe in that product. It's phenomenal, and it has absolutely been a game changer. So if I recommend something or I talk about something or I say I like this, then just understand I have no commitment to that. If I ever do, I will put that out front, but I'm very, very uncomfortable with the whole marketing thing. I just think there's some companies out there that'll sell their soul and pimp anything they get paid to pimp. And I just can't do that. If I was a different person, I could be way more successful on social media. I could do videos of Green Beret, fucking tells you how to paint your gun. The Green Beret does this and Green Beret does that. I'm not a Green Beret. I'm a freaking hazmat. I'm a civilian. So I won't do that. I hate it. I think it's way overdone, but it is successful. That's how you become successful on social media. You run these punch words and you exaggerate your capabilities, but people love it. They eat that stuff. People who don't know any better eat that stuff up. So I'm on the fence about that. Have you ever worked with JTF2? That's the Canadian Special Operations. I have not really worked with them. I was at Todd Hodnett's one time, Accuracy First, shooting with them. Very impressive unit. But I haven't operationally work with them at all? That's a weird question. Do you know anybody who lost a massive amount of weight to become a crimper? I actually do. There was a guy on my team who got liposuction. I didn't know until years later, but he got liposuction to get below the weight to join the army. Weird. Is that 2.5 to 10 optics suitable for 308 bolt gun, or is 3.5 to 15 more appropriate? 3.5 to 15 is more appropriate for a bolt gun. 10 power is a little weak, honestly. Even though I went through sniper school with a 10 power scope, I would go 3.5 to 15. Somebody actually, this wasn't a question on Instagram, but somebody emailed me and said, hey, I just got moved to military sales in my company. I'm not going to say what company it is. Do you have any advice? I do. I lived in that world. I dealt with a lot of vendors and I dealt with a lot of questions. Number one, understand the federal acquisitions regulation. If you don't understand that, you're going to get in trouble, right? Understand what can be done and what can't be done, all right? So as you can talk the talk and speak the language, you may end up knowing more than the people you're talking to, unless they're a program manager. Number two, don't be building stuff that the government doesn't want, the army doesn't want, SOCOM doesn't want. There's places to go to find out validated requirements that they have. I talked to a body armor company a couple of years ago and they were like showing me their soft armor. And they were like, hey, we're gonna go after a SOCOM contract. And I was thinking to myself, should I say something or should I just let them in? I was like, guys, stop. SOCOM's not buying your body armor. And they were like, oh my God, why not? And they were pissed. Like, I'm super honest. It's a gift and it's a curse because people don't fucking like it. But I said, look, so no, what you have, they already have. And they've issued thousands. Well, ours is like 3 ounces lighter. I was like, doesn't matter. It's such an expensive commodity because everybody needs body armor, right? It's such an expensive commodity. And what they have in the system meets their requirement. Now, if somebody wants to write a whole new requirement that it has to be lower weight, then maybe, but that's a freaking 5-year process. So concentrate on law enforcement or civilians or whatever you want to do. But if you waste your time chasing SOCOM contracts for something they don't want, then you're just killing yourself, right? Now, if your armor does this, this, and this, and I name like 5 things that I'm not going to say here, then they'll listen to you. But until then, you're wasting your freaking time. So don't chase what you think they want. Go after what they want. And there's places to find out what their validated requirements are. Okay, that's 2. The other thing, don't bash other companies in front of the military. People used to drive me freaking crazy. I used to be in meetings at SHOT Show, and they'd be like, hey, this other company, there's this, they're and I'm like, stop. Stop bad-mouthing companies in my presence. I won't let them do it to you, and you won't do it to them. It shows unprofessionalism on your part. Tell me what you bring to the table and stop trying to push other people down. And lastly, understand your market and your people you're talking to. Don't talk down to special operations guys. Don't tell them their requirement is not valid. I remember, I won't mention the name of the company, but a company was talking, we were talking about ballistics or something like that, or a new requirement we had. And this company had hired a former SAS guy. And he was like, I don't know why you want that. I was in SAS. And I'm like, stop. I don't care about your resume. I'm the customer. You do what I tell you to do to compete for the contract or don't compete. I don't fucking care if you compete or not. But I'm the customer and I will tell you what we need. You don't even know what my requirement is because you don't know what we do. And they were all freaking stunned because nobody talks bluntly like that in the civilian world. Now, if you want to say, hey, I understand your requirement is this. If you were a little flexible on that requirement, we could get you here if the weight could be a little higher or whatever. That's a conversation among professionals, right? But to say, that's a stupid requirement. I don't know why you want that. I will shut your ass down in a heartbeat. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? Just understand who you are talking to, the environment you're in, and stop chasing rainbows that you think they need and go after contracts that they have already got validated requirements on and understand the acquisitions process so you don't get in trouble. And lastly, I said lastly twice, but lastly, don't be giving free shit to people who have no influence. They're not supposed to take it. It's illegal for them to take it, and you're just gonna get a bad name in the industry if you start throwing out free samples. It's not gonna get you anywhere, but there's mechanisms in place to get your stuff in front of the right people, but it has to be done legally, or you're just gonna build a bad name for yourself. Possible movies. Black 47, Devil's Own, Wind That Shakes the Barley, Patriot Games. Black 47 was a good movie. It was about the famine and a guy comes back serving the British Army and he just starts swacking people. It's actually a pretty good movie, I thought. The rest of them, not so much. 10.3 or 11.5 for setup. 11.5 gets you better ballistics. There's a cutoff. 11.5 inch barrel, if you go below that, you lose a lot and it's still a short barrel. There's been a lot of testing done on that. would you and Usheen do reviews of Irish movies? I don't like to, I try not to, and again, I'm bad at this because I don't like to do stuff, even though it's popular, that everybody else does. You put on, you know, YouTube and it's like Green Berets evaluate special operations movies and Green Beret Sniper, Navy SEAL Sniper evaluates 10 sniper. And even though people like it, I just can't do that. I don't like doing it. So no, I wouldn't do that. I like doing podcasts with Usheen. He's a very knowledgeable guy, but I'm in receive mode for most of the time. And I like the way we do it. And I don't think I would change that. How do you reconcile fear and duty to country? Fear, I talked to somebody, I think one of the Marine instructors about this, and fear in combat and all that. And I'm not beating my chest or saying I'm the bravest guy out there, but I think if you're in, like if you're in Afghanistan and you're walking in Helmand province, every step is a possible IED or an ambush at a certain point, right? If you're driving in Iraq where there's hundreds of IEDs a day, you have to understand, you have to put that stuff behind you. You have to ignore it. You compartmentalize it and you get on with your freaking job. And it doesn't mean you have no fear. It's just you're gonna ignore it. And I remember talking to a warrant officer in my team in Iraq in 05. We were talking about this and he said, look, I've had a good life. If I die, I die. And this is the life I chose. This is the job I chose. And unless you can put it out of your head like this, fear will destroy you. I and a lot of guys I know were able to just compartmentalize it, shut it off and get on with our freaking job. Because if you can't do that, then you've no business being in special operations or US military combat arms. You just don't. You have to do it. I don't know how to tell you to do that. I don't know how some people can do it and some people can't. But I'm telling you, if you can't shut it off, then you'll implode, I imagine. And a lot of times people will shut it off and they'll see killing and they'll see dying and they'll see horrific things and they'll compartmentalize it, and when they get out of the military it'll all come back, because it's almost like it's being held back until you don't need to hold it back and it just comes flooding in on you. And how you deal with that, somebody asked me about dealing with somebody leaving the military with all kinds of problems. Look, you need to buy time. You need to buy time to let a little bit of space and a little bit of perspective. If that person is pouring alcohol on it, it's making it 10 times worse. And I don't know how you stop somebody drinking who likes to drink, but that's self-medicating. And alcohol is a depressant, and you got to get them to stop. People leave the Army, Marine Corps, whatever, especially combat arms or special operations, they leave, and all of a sudden they're extremely isolated. And all the friends are not really their friends anymore. They are, but they're not. You're out of the club. You're not in a freaking club anymore. Let's be honest, right? And unless you can go keep that momentum going, it's going to come crashing down. I don't agree with these guys to get out and say, I'm going to take a year off and go fishing. Your world will collapse. You've been going 1,000 miles an hour for 25 years. You can't just stop like that. You got to find your passion. When you get out, you can get out, you can use your GI Bill, go to freaking gunsmithing school, just keep that momentum going, right? And if you have a good marriage, then you have somebody to talk to all the time. But guys get out, they get divorced, they end up sitting, pouring alcohol in the problem, and they end up eating a bullet, and it's horrific. Alcohol makes everything worse. And I'm not anti-drink. I drank for years. I kind of stopped when I had kids, but anything in proportion, right, in moderation. But when you're isolated and you're sitting at home and your world has come crashing and you've lost that sense of purpose and you start pouring alcohol in the problem, it becomes bad. And it's not like your friends are abandoning you. You just got other priorities, and they're training and they're deploying, and you know, you're kind of out here under periphery. You got to find new friends, man. Hobbies. I don't have any hobbies. I freaking should have hobbies, but I don't have any hobbies. Favorite long-range rifle optic. Again, not paid by anybody. I have a 9.47-35 with a Tremor 3 reticle in it. And that's what the Marines have on their rifles out here. And if you haven't ran a Tremor 3, it's really, really intuitive. And when you look through it first, you're like, oh my God, this is not an optic thing. This is a reticle. You can get it in any most companies will put it in there for you. But so I never shoot on 35 power, but it's good for target ID, for setting up my optic to make sure I have the right eye relief. It's good for reading wind and stuff like that, but I'll power that thing down. I rarely shoot over 15, between 15 and 20 power, depending on the range. But the Tremor 3 has wind dots, and you'll get people that'll probably put comments down below and go, those wind dots are BS. You don't know what you're talking about. They can be calibrated for any caliber. And like for 308, generally, depending on your density altitude, each wind dot's about 4 miles an hour. And what it brings to the table is, let's say I'm shooting at 600 meters and my elevation is 4 mils. I can hold 4 mils, not dial. And I can run that reticle on that left or right side into the wind, and it tells me how much wind I can get away with. If each dot's 4 miles an hour and I have two dots on the target, one on the left and one on the right, that means I can get anything between 4 and 8 miles an hour. Because there's nobody out there that puts their hand up and go, oh, that wind is 5 miles an hour exactly. It's constantly changing, right? But I can use it as a template. I can run it on the left or right side of that target, depending on the width of the target. And if I have one wind on one side and one or the other, I know anything between 4 and 8. And I can call wind pretty accurately between down to 4 miles an hour, right? So I can bracket that wind and break that shot. And then as I go out further, once I get the wind, the reticle automatically calibrates the wind for me, right? It pushes those wind dots out. So if 4 works here, as long as the wind doesn't change, 4 will work at all distances if I'm generally shooting in the same direction. I know that's pretty super confusing for people who don't know, but that's the optic I have. That's my favorite. It's a Night Force 7-35 ATAC-R, which is a $3,500 reticle or scope, I think, with a Tremor 3 reticle. That's what I use mostly. Now, on a carbine, I do like shooting 5.56. I shoot LPVOs, and I shoot generally a BDC reticle, but there's ways to zero that thing. The biggest problem with a low-power variable optic, like a 1-6, 1-8-ish, people zero at the wrong range, and everything's... They zero it so it's accurate close, and then at distance it's wrong. But there's ways to do that. I'm not going to get into it right now. Favorite CCW carry? I carry a Glock 19. I've carried it for years and years and years. It's nothing fancy. It doesn't even have a red dot on it. That's what I've carried for years. And the only reason I carried a Glock is because that's what we had at work in special operations, is what we carried. And I wanted to have the same platform there. I have a Glock 34. I have a Glock 17. I have a lot of Glocks, and I have a couple of other guns, but that's what I carry. In the ARW, which role would benefit a future more? If I'm planning to do private security, I don't know what the range I can do anymore. A private security job, I don't know. Maybe you'd be better in the police force, in the ARU. I don't know. It would depend on what you want to do. I assume you want to go overseas and do that world. I would talk to somebody who's in the security industry and ask them what would benefit you more. It depends where you are. Generally, your job as a security guy is not to get in a gunfight. You're in there to mitigate stuff and get away and protect the principal. So I don't know. Do you ever hunt? I actually don't hunt. I grew up hunting, but not like in America. I grew up rabbits and pheasants and pigeons, and we ate everything we friggin' shot pretty much. I actually hunted with ferrets, which is super primitive. And I snared rabbits and all that kind of stuff. But in America, I just never got into it. Some of the Marine Corps guys, the sniper instructors here out in Utah, drew tags and went out and hunted and got mule deer and stuff like that while we were here. It's just not something I would never want to sit in a tree stand. I don't have the freaking attention span. I'm supposed to be a sniper and I'm the most impatient fucker you ever met. But I would like to hike in Colorado or something like that and do a long range hunt. Since I have the shooting capability, I want to run hunting training for civilians. And I have a one-day POI that'll change the way you do things. Email me if you think that you and a couple of buddies would want to do that. We could even do it. Well, we couldn't really do it online, but it's a one-day POI for hunters that I think you would really, really like. But never really got the chance to hunt. Maybe I will someday, but I'm usually too freaking busy. How do you grow as a leader at a young age, leading people older and the same as you? Man, you got to do what's right. You got to keep your integrity and you got to do what's right. Now remember I did a podcast with Ushin, you know, a couple of months ago about your leadership style being tied to your personality, right? So you can be nice and you can be friendly without being a pushover. You can be stern and you can be firm without being a fucking asshole. And sorry about the language. It kind of evolves over time. Listen to the leadership podcast I'm doing with Cody, hopefully today. And hopefully you'll get something out of it. What was your workout routine when you were in the army? So workout and physical fitness changed during the GWAT, right? In the regular army, it was push-up, sit-ups, 3-mile run. We all did stuff on our own. There was a lot of guys in early GWAT that were lifting big weights, and some of them were taking the vitamin S, and they're just big monsters. And that doesn't work when you're running and gunning and jumping across rooftops and climbing buildings all night long. Cardio and upper body strength. And that's where all that... CrossFit stuff came in, functional fitness, but that's where military should be. These big, huge monsters, they can't climb. For reconnaissance, they drink too much water, eat too much food, and if they get shot, you can't medevac them because they weigh 250 pounds. Functional fitness is where it's at. Advice for transition from military life. Already covered that. We need to do more podcasts about the troubles. I'd love to. Somebody's like, what scope would you recommend for taking to your class on a SCAR 17308? And what Kestrel? Kestrel 5700 Elite with applied ballistics. And I would recommend you sell that SCAR and buy a decent bolt gun. And you could probably sell that SCAR and buy a $2,000 decent bolt gun. Ruger, a Tika, even a Christensen Arms, Sig Cross. And you could probably buy an optic as well for the price you'll get for that SCAR. Not a good system, just not. And I try not to bash anything because everything is pros and cons, but that was a trouble program from the start. Thoughts on CBP, selecting Accuracy International? I assume that's Custom Border Patrol. Accuracy International is a great rifle. I used it for years and years and years. Good for them. What music do you listen to? I don't listen to music. I listen to books and podcasts. How do you keep a positive mindset when a world full of chaos and devoid of sanity? I ignore it. I know that's probably not what you want. That's all the shit in the news. I keep appraised of the news, but I try to avoid the echo chamber of the same shit over and over again. They're all in the business of keeping you tuned in. Fox News, MSNBC, all of them. They're all in the business of just feeding you what you want to hear. And it's not information, it's affirmation. And they just keep pumping it and pumping it and pumping it. I kind of, you know, look at international stuff and I look at the world as it is and I tune out. I like to be aware, but I used to be sucked into the news so much. I listened to freaking talk radio, I listen to freaking, and you're just getting madder and madder and madder for shit that I can't do anything about. And it was making me fucking, sorry about my life, it was making me mad and pissed off at all times. And I just don't want to deal with it anymore. My biggest goal getting out of the military was a stress-free life. So I just tune all that crap out. Turn the freaking TV off and go out in nature and you'll be a happier person for it. You're going to go back to Grand Thumb. He has not asked me. If he asked me, I'd love to. Sports fan? If so, why is it baseball? I'm not a sports fan. Don't watch any sports app at all. Never assimilated into American culture that way. Don't watch football, don't watch baseball, don't watch basketball, any of it. I just don't get it. People get so into it. I don't do it. Don't find it any way appealing. Did you find being polite until you were pushed as being an issue when first stateside? No, I don't get pushed. No, I never let anybody push me. I don't. So wasn't a thing that I know of. I had a platoon sergeant in the infantry when I was a private who was intimidated by me, which I didn't know at the time. And he used to freaking shut me down all the time. And I pulled him aside and I was like, what is your problem? And he said to me, I can't have you stealing my thunder, which shocked me because a sergeant first class at that time to me was the man. Man, but because I've been in Somalia and I've been in special operations, I've been around the world, he was intimidating me, which is childish. How have you kept yourself in check when things are faltering and you're spent? I go out in nature. I get a little solitude and I go out in nature and I go hiking. That tunes me right back up. How do we help the Irish Defence Forces evolve into a future? The Irish Defence Forces has a very, very passive mindset and it always has. It's run by politicians, which so is the American military. But because they're not in any danger, they're an island, and they're not really involved in any combat, you're always going to get that very, very kind of passive mindset. And they're not going to get serious about evolving into an army until something terrible happens and they feel like they're vulnerable. It's going to be very, very difficult to change that mindset. If you're in the Irish Army, all you got to do is get enough, as much training as you can but it's very much a job for guys there. And even if you deploy, you're under these very strict rules of engagement that will probably never change until the world changes. But the world is getting more dangerous every day and not safer. What happens when SF faces are revealed? Do they get taken out of action? Not at all. Special operations are not the CIA. They're generally not doing undercover stuff. And the world, the way it is now, I asked the Swick CSM about this, and I can't remember if I asked him on camera or off camera, how do you control social media? And he's like, you can't. You can put out guidelines and recommendations, but at the end of the day, families are posting stuff and you just can't. So you try to control it as best you can, but that's the world we live in. It's actually more, believe it or not, it's more suspicious if you're rolled up in a foreign country and you have absolutely no social media. It's a red flag in this day and age. So you think about it, if you're traveling on, I don't want to get into that, but generally, there, like, I fired a guy from my team because he posted stuff on social media with all of us on it. And then there was other reasons too. That was just distraught. It broke the camel's back. But these guys are not generally doing undercover stuff. They're not. Some of them veer into that world and there's processes for that. But generally, you're an American Army man, or you're a Navy SEAL or whatever. You're not that cool. Okay. Nobody gets pulled from service because their picture posted on social media. Look at Instagram. Special Force Command has an Instagram account. USASOC has an Instagram account. All the groups have an Instagram account. It's the world we live in. So it's not the CIA. It's not. They're not ninjas. They're soldiers, right? Or sailors. Shooting a carrying handle mounted red dot. That's old school, right there. 25, 36, 50 or something more effective. Depends what your employment is. What are you using it for? Bear in mind, a 50 meter zero equates to about a 200 meter zero, near and far zero. I have a video about this before. It depends on your employment where you want to zero. Generally, I don't want to get into it here, but generally I'll chrono a gun first and I'll see where my near zero and far zero are and I'll make a decision off that. But it depends on your employment. National Guard. So can you join National Guard and go to Special Operations while staying Guardsman? Absolutely you can. 19th and 20th Special Forces groups are National Guards. In the US military, reserves are non-combat arms generally, and National Guard are combat arms, MOSs. So you can join the Army and say, I want to be an ATN X-ray, which is a Special Forces operator at the base level, and say, I want to be in 19th, or I want to be in the National Guard. And I tell people this, it's like a hidden secret almost, that, hey, people say, oh, I'd love to go to Special Forces, but I really love my job. And I go to the Guard. You get to play both worlds, right? So you'll go in, you'll join the Army, you'll go to basic training and advanced infantry training. You'll go from there to airborne school, and then you'll come to Fort Bragg, and you'll do what's called the Special Operations Preparation Course. It's like a 4-week course that gets you ready for selection. You go to selection and most of them pass because the preparation course is so good. You go to selection and then you'll be on orders for the Q course. Basically, that's a year and a half, right? Depending on your MOS, your military occupation. You'll be a medic, an engineer, a communications guy, or a weapons sergeant. And then you'll learn another language, you'll go through the whole Q course. And then when you're done, you'll go back home and you'll be part of a National Guard unit. So you'll do 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. A lot of them deploy, but they have to keep your job for you. You deploy, it's a lot of time, it's on you if you want to deploy or not. It's actually a really, really good option for people who have a job, want to keep that job, but also want to be a freaking Green Beret. And you get the same, you get access to the same schools. You can go to dive school, you can go to free fall school, you can go to sniper school. You just have to get that slot, which everybody's trying to go to some of those schools, but it's a great option if you like your job and you want to keep it, but you also want to be a special operations guy. How was your training with the Marine Corps? I'm still here. Did you learn about history or culture of the Corps? No. the guys will be talking all the time and they'll throw out an acronym and I'm like, well, what is that? Let's pretend I wasn't in the Marine Corps. What does that mean? And generally it's something I understand, but I just don't know that acronym because the Army call it something else. But generally the culture here in MARSOC, which is Marine Special Operations, it's fantastic. Great instructors, great students, very professional, freaking rock stars, man. And I really like being among this kind of culture again. It's like therapy for me. So really enjoying it. What is the longest shot you ever made at night? I don't know if you're talking training or operational, but I don't want to be giving away our capabilities. Favorite caliber for long range work, 300 Norma Magnum. When you're zeroing, do you prefer bipod, bag, a bipod? I try to zero on a bipod as much as I can prone. And people will say, well, what if you get in a knee then, because it's all change. You try to replicate that zero position when you're on a knee, when you're sitting, when you're against cover. You try to square off on the gun to keep that eye relief the same. Hardest part of SFA, Special Forces Assessment and Selection. One day we did rifle, I think they've taken it out now, but we did rifle PT for like 3 hours or something. might be an exaggeration, but it felt like 3 hours. And then when we were taught we were done and we had no strength left in our arms, they moved us around the building and we did log PT with the big logs for another couple of hours. And people think being short and doing Log PT is easier. It's freaking harder because you're trying to take your weight and you're up your freaking tippy toes down the freaking log. That was pretty brutal. Do you think the Irish Army recruiting was more vigorous than the US Army training? I don't know. At the time, I was 18. I was a kid, right? Going into the American Army, I was older and more mature. I knew how to play the games. So I think it's apples and oranges. I think for me personally, the Irish Army was harder, but it's because I was a kid. And I went to the American Army first and then went over there. I'm sure I think the American Army was harder. But they're similar in a lot of ways, but different in a lot of ways. Same thing as selection for Ranger Wing and selection for Special Forces. A little different, right? The selection for Special Forces is 3 to 4 weeks. But then you have a year, year and a half of training, whereas you're being selected every freaking day, generally, especially back then. In the Ranger Wing, we did selection. We went into the thing. Very few people got kicked out then at that point, and it was just training. So, again, kind of too hard to pick one over the other. Okay, I think that's it. That's just over an hour. If I didn't get to your question, sorry. I freaking tried to get as many as I could, but there's no way I can get through them all. What's coming up? December, 2-day long range course. Once I talk to the range owner, I'm going to try to add a couple of slots to that, so stay tuned. I'll post it on social media. Please come shoot with us. If you can, you'll get a lot out of it. Even if you're a beginner, it's geared towards beginners. Law enforcement course, I can do 2 days, I can do 3 days, or I can do a 5-day advanced sniper course. That's not just shooting for you. And I was training in Arkansas before I come out here, and one of the law enforcement snipers come up and he was like, hey, if you'd have told me 2 days ago I could do headshots at 800 meters, I told you you were full of shit. But I know cops don't shoot that far, and that's why they're so reluctant to train. But when you shoot at 600-800 meters, that 400 meter shot becomes very, very simplistic, and you can't say that you'll never, ever, ever have to take a shot at that range. The world is not getting safer, especially for you guys. And I like training cops. I have a lot of respect for cops. So reach out, shoot me an email. I'm going to try to do more content. I've just been busy in December and January while the weather sucks. If you see me in SHOT Show, please come up and say hello. I like meeting new people. And that I'm going to try to ramp up some of the long range shooting. Now, I'm still going to be working for the Marine Corps. That's 8 weeks a year. Actually, no, 16 weeks a year. It's a month in Lejeune for marksmanship and a month out here. In Utah, and it's 2 classes a year, so that kind of pulls me out of the loop. So if I am running courses, you might want to jump on them. Still doing Zoom calls. Kirsten does Zoom calls on situational awareness. Kirsten's ebook will be coming out hopefully by Black Friday or soon after. Great gift. It's just mindset, and it's changing the way you think. And again, there's craziness going out there in the world. So hey, if you're still here, I appreciate it. Sorry if I bored you to death. Thanks for listening this long, and I'll see you next time. Bye.